Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's Christmas!
We're walking in the air, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 12 Rambles of Christmas. We're at number 2, the penultimate one. Oh.
We're at sort of Ramble Eve?
Yes, yeah. I suppose so.
Oh,
yeah.
I've got that Christmas spirit. I've left out some Ramble carrots for Ramble reindeers.
Yeah. They got football boots on, have they?
I gained them on the roof.
How does a Ramble reindeer differ from a normal reindeer?
They're wearing Adidas Predators.
Yeah.
Been on the Ramble Sherry all day as well, haven't you?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to number 2 in our countdown of the 12 Rambles of Christmas, a daily countdown of what we see as the 12 defining topics in football since we began the Football Ramble back in 2007, Luke.
We've had a funny old run. It's been good, hasn't it?
It's been a great run so far.
Yeah, let's keep the energy up.
There's 2 left.
Yeah.
And this is the second to last one.
Penultimate.
Yeah. It's the end of the Alex Ferguson era.
Big.
Yeah, so big it stunned everyone into silence.
Whoa, what do you want us to do?
Luke, seldom are you speechless.
I wasn't ready, I didn't know you were going to do it. Yeah. I thought I'd get a bit of preamble first.
You're too busy thankful for the man's time at Manchester United.
At the end of the Darren Ferguson era, come on, off we go.
I think this is, again, we spoke about this on the FIFA one, but it was something that just never felt like it would happen, even though we knew time marches on, but he just kept going and kept being relevant in the game.
Absolutely.
That's the key thing. Kept being relevant.
We debated, this will tell its own story. We debated about the naming of this episode. Should we call it the end of the Alex Ferguson era at Manchester United? Or should we call it...
Tit off Taggart.
Should we... You promised you wouldn't undermine this one. I said, give me one. Mate. Just give me one.
It's keggy tomorrow, so
and
don't
it's
worry
taking
about it.
You 2 minutes. Yeah.
Don't let the cat out of the bag.
12-point blowing of a lead tomorrow will be quite the occasion. But no, and then we thought, no. Alex Ferguson is someone who has affected, whether you want to admit it or not, when you're sitting at home or sitting on the train listening to this, Alex Ferguson is the defining manager in England, arguably ever.
Oh, yeah.
So we're just going to call it the end of the Alex Ferguson era, because it was an era and it affected everything.
The dynasty.
Yes. Well, he tried to leave a dynasty, and he didn't quite manage it. More on that in a minute.
More on the succession.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, on the 6th of November 1986, Ferguson was appointed manager at Manchester United. Go on, Luke, for old time's sake.
19 years after the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
Not that many, really.
No, it's not. That's a surprisingly short...
And I think that's relevant. That's why I said it.
Yeah, it is. It's a good point, Marcus.
Thank
well done.
You, brother. Well, when he took over Manchester United, they hadn't won the league since 1967. A little bit of time, of course. And Ferguson didn't win the league for a few years until, his first league title at Manchester United for a few years. But he vowed to knock Liverpool off their perch. They'd been dominated English football for some time. And my, didn't he?
Yeah, it's such a bold kind of mission statement as well. You're really setting yourself up for a fall. It shows the confidence he had in himself.
Yeah, during his time at Manchester United, he won 13 league titles, 5 FA Cups, 4 League Cups, 2 Champions Leagues, 1 Cup Winners Cup.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Which was in the form of the Club World Cup.
And the Club World Cup in a pear tree.
And that year when they didn't enter the FA Cup.
Yeah. 5 FA Cups.
Done. What are they even 4 of?
League Cups.
Right, let's do this. We're going
to do it.
Right, 5 FA Cups.
I don't know what he won 3 of.
4 League Cups.
He won 11 Premier League Manager of the Seasons Award and 27 Manager of the Months Award.
All right, that goes at the top.
I've got one for 2 Nevilles.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Let's go 3 bottles of red wine.
Yeah.
All right, ready?
He did win 2 Champions Leagues. We could put the Nevilles in if you want, but I fear that...
I prefer Nevilles.
Yeah.
I think he would too. 5
FA Cups. 4 League Cups, 3 red wines, 2 Nevilles, and a Club World Cup.
Yeah, well rehearsed, lads.
Yeah,
you derailed that.
Yeah.
He was also given a knighthood.
Oh, we say that then.
Oh,
just the one knighthood.
And a knighthood in
front of the Queen.
And a knighthood from the Queen.
There you go.
Right. Mm.
There edit that go. Together, Pete. It'll be brilliant.
A real episode for City fans, like, this, isn't it?
Whack a beat under it.
Man, City fans are loving this. They've had their one, though.
Yeah, they have.
They're all right.
At the Swamp.
They can just look at the league table.
They must have been thinking to themselves, yeah, take it.
Yeah.
Got to talk about Sir Alex Ferguson. One of, if not the greatest managers of all time, considered by many people.
No doubt.
I'm putting it out there. I think he is the greatest club manager of all time. In my purview, in my knowledge.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, because the game, I think we're all broadly in agreement, is probably the best it's ever been. And he, you know, ushered in team after team.
Yeah.
Like a lot of fans of clubs, you know, their memories of the peak of their club, it will be a specific side that was there for a season or a couple of seasons. But with Ferguson, he created great team after great team. And I don't know of anyone else that's ever done that, really.
Especially with that longevity.
And we've just done a very, very well-conceived part of A Christmas Carol about the things he's won. So we don't need to go back onto that.
Mm.
But the 3 themes I pulled out when we were prepping for this, Jim, I'd just like to expand on what you said, and I agree with you. His constant ability to reinvent teams and strengthen while on top.
Mm.
Constant ability to make sure no player or individual was bigger than the club,
which
is easier said than done, the biggest club in the world, by the way. And ability to play good football at just about all times.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about yesterday about them being humbled by Guardiola's Barcelona, but by and large, Ferguson teams always play good football.
Oh, absolutely. But to the point where, though, that you don't even really... It was just a given, wasn't it, that Man United played in a particular way. We joke about the West Ham way and, you know, teams having a certain style of play. But with Man United, it just went without saying, of course they played well, of course they were good. They were Man United, they're the biggest team in the world. Why would they lump it?
Yeah, and I think what you say there about Barcelona, you know, obviously the previous one was about Pep Guardiola's Barcelona, which possibly the greatest club side of all time. And it was telling in those 2 finals when Manchester United lost 2-0. The 3-1, they were never going to win that.
Mm.
But with that 2-0 one, people just thought, you know, the famous Clive Tilsley line, Manchester United surely they'll score. They always score.
Yeah.
You did think that even though Manchester United would get pummeled, you thought, but they'll get something out of this. Mm. So I think that was the strange thing. When they came up against that Barcelona side, it took probably the greatest club side ever, or one of them certainly, to convincingly beat Manchester United to the point of in the second final they played when you thought, oh yeah, hands up, Manchester United are second best here. Because they were so relentless, Manchester United. They never knew when they were beaten. The last minute goals.
Do you remember that FA Cup tie against Portsmouth?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think the parallel with Pep Guardiola's Barcelona is a pretty good one because Alex Ferguson created a global brand.
Yeah.
With the style of football, the players he had, and the almost swashbuckling style he played at times. Pep Guardiola did the same thing.
Mm.
Don't you also think...
He made a lot of money for a lot of people, as did Pep.
He did. But don't you think, Pete, the other thing is it makes that even more impressive is Ferguson came along and managed through what we're living in now, which I guess is rather cornerly called like the information revolution with the internet and all this other stuff. I mean, Alex Ferguson's 75 years old.
Yeah.
Most people's granddads can't even work a computer.
Yeah.
Yet he was able to stay on top. At no point did you ever feel like... And a good good way of describing this would be lots of rivals came along, mm-hmm. like Wenger, yeah. Mourinho, and they would be able to beat him and yeah. beat his teams occasionally. But he when he finished, he was still winning league titles.
Oh man!
So he never felt like he was overwhelmed by the changing nature of the game. No. He sort of really owned that.
He lost one or two battles, but he would win the war.
Yeah, but he didn't. Yeah. But he did in the it's like you said, the inverse edge with Jose and also Arsene Wenger when he saw slightly more.
Baines,
thoughtful managers came in. Like he did, still kick their ass, and he didn't. But he didn't get out early. He didn't sort of go, right, my time's gone. I'm a bit of a dinosaur. I'm getting out of here. He didn't even massively change. He just went, I know who I am. I know what the kind of team I want, and just
and that'll be good enough.
Really.
Yeah,
completely. And I think you know, Jim, you said about him. What would be the sort of reinventing sides almost? You know that season where he sold Ince and Kanchelskis and so on. Like, what the hell are you doing? They brought the youngsters in, of course. Yeah. But he wouldn't be afraid to think, actually, you're done, and move them on. And in one sense, they were gambles, but in another sense, they were very calculated decisions. Mm. And his ability to do that and keep his mind sharp, because, look, you said there, Luke, about you know people's granddads being that old, can't work mobile phones or whatever it is. Ferguson, he was a great delegator, of course, you know, so he had very good people around him. But he managed to keep his mind sharp, even in a football sense. We look at some other managers who come in and we know what they're going to do. The kind of the older British manager. And sometimes that can be effective to a point at a certain type of club. But for Ferguson to keep that going for so many years and to keep his mind fresh like that, amazing.
Well, apparently,
Jim, go on.
Well, when Ferguson's dad retired, apparently he died shortly afterwards.
Right, okay.
And Ferguson had always feared that, you know, if he you know, stopped being active, that could be something that affected him. And that what a motivation.
I think that's a common fear among a lot of people. But do you remember the talk, speaking about him being good at delegating? It was quite a fashionable thing to say at one point that, it's his assistants. He just hires really good assistants. Mm-hmm. And then he went through so many assistants, it was like, it's not really. Because Carlos Queiroz, Phelan, all the rest of them, none of them have really gone deep.
No, that's an excellent point. McLaren as well, you know. Or did win a Dutch title.
He did. We're after the watershed, can you say that?
How do you achieve a Dutch title? Carlos Queiroz, you know, went to manage Real Madrid and a few others.
And Portugal, of course.
Yeah, and Portugal, but didn't quite cut the mustard.
Yeah.
Shows,
so Ferguson was the denominator. And he's the only manager, isn't he, to have won the English League three times in a row.
Yeah.
And he's done that twice.
Incredible. And you're talking about him retiring. I think lots and lots of football fans across England would have loved him to retire a lot earlier. Because if you weren't a Manchester United fan, it was just like, ugh, that man inflicts so much grief on so many other football clubs.
Oh, God, yeah. He's taken years off my life with the stress he's afforded me.
He's dominated the game. He's absolutely dominated the English game.
He was the king of the Premier League.
Oh, of course.
One of the facts I enjoy that I found while researching this is that Opta did a study and found that an extra 79 seconds on average were played in injury time when United were losing during the Ferguson era.
Get a load of that.
But that's his influence.
His influence wasn't just on the pitch. You know, he went into that press conference. He owned... when I say king, it's more like the sort of godfather of the Premier League. You know, everyone sung to his tune. And if they didn't, he would look disgustedly at them and say, well, what is he...
Lee Sharp, get out of my office.
He's come from Japan.
That one in there.
But it's strange, indeed. But it's strange to think that he initially planned to retire in the summer of 2002. He announced this in the summer of 2001. Very odd. Changed his mind 6 months later. But again, Jim, sliding doors moment.
Absolutely.
Sven was touted.
I mean, imagine that now. I mean,
can you imagine him retiring at 60?
No, exactly. Ridiculous. You just can't, can you?
And can I mean, you imagine Sven at Man United?
Yes, I can. I don't want to do it again.
Back then, it wouldn't have been as insane as it now sounds. But
it wouldn't have
had the legacy.
Indeed, no doubt. Yeah, that's true.
Do you think Sven would have won more in that period between 2002 and 2013?
The problem is, we'll never know.
A shame. It's a real shame.
Did Sven even win the league with Notts County when he had like £1 billion?
I don't think he won the league at Lazio, Peter. Yeah. Have a bit of respect.
Right, Sven's number one. We'll do that tomorrow.
I would love it.
Yeah. Well, Ferguson did retire at the end of the 2012-2013 season. And this time, he announced he was leaving in May when the league title had already been wrapped up. Man City had won the title the previous year. We spoke about that.
And there was no way he was going to retire on that.
No chance. Absolutely no chance. I did think it was interesting. If Man City had become that dominant, would Ferguson still be there? Oh, we just want more.
You know, I'm a huge Alex Ferguson fan, and I've bored people for years on this show and elsewhere about him. I think it would have been an absolute crime for him to whimper away like that.
Yeah,
I'm very, very pleased he fittingly won the title in 2013.
Very much so, yeah. And it was a bit of a gamble from Ferguson in that sense, because Man City won the title the previous year. They were getting stronger and stronger. Mm. They really were. And you got the impression that Ferguson wanted to show them one last time who's boss.
Yeah.
You know, he was never going to go out, especially to them, Luke, the noisy neighbours.
Absolutely.
And my goodness, he got Van Persie in for that season, of course, and he really helped out as well. It's quite funny, in his last game in charge of Manchester United, they threw away a 5-2 lead to draw 5 all at West Ham. Such an odd footnote. Yeah,
one of the oddest games in Premier League history, that, certainly because of the context. And also, also, how often do you see a 5-5 draw?
Yeah, very strange. That season, in his last one, they'd been knocked out of the Champions League by Real Madrid in the round of 16. There was a sending off in that game, and it was, you know, but they did compete with Real Madrid, certainly. But they'd been an ever-present in the Champions League from the early 90s, really. Yeah. And
they were a pure Champions League team. Part of the furniture.
The fact that they won the treble in the circumstances they did as well means they're one of the defining characteristics of the Champions League.
Yeah. And when he did retire, though, no one knew who would take over. But everyone knew what a tough task it was going to be.
Well, people looked at the eras between George Graham and Arsene Wenger, because it's the nearest example, with Bruce Rioch coming in.
Yeah.
People were thinking there's probably going to be a full
Stuart
guy
Houston
there.
As well, was he not involved?
That was, I think, on a very, very temporary basis.
Okay, right,
but
yeah.
That was really the only precedent of this, but it's such a huge, huge task. It was effectively, I think that was going to be impossible for anybody, for any manager in the world.
Well, football doesn't accommodate managerial legacy now.
No.
That's essentially why. And I'm sure we'll talk a bit about this in the second half, but even at the time, it was very, very difficult to imagine another manager at United managing even half that time, you know, despite Ferguson's best efforts and who he eventually had a big say in appointing.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Well, David Moyes was the man to choose that was chosen to replace him, the chosen one.
Yes.
We'll talk about his tenure at Manchester United after this.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I think I worked for 16 years here in England. I would like a
Christmas argument.
Arsene Wenger there. Another man with a legacy. Luke, what have you got to say?
Well, we're on number two now, so you're running out of time to suggest your biggest moment since 2007 to show at thefootballramble.com. We're going to unveil it on tomorrow's show, number one. So get in there quick if you can, because the winner will, or our favourite, I suppose, will select as the winner and now have that moment recorded in the new year on a special episode and receive a 55-inch 4K TV from Toshiba. Mm. Toshiba offers you the chance to watch every football match in 4K picture clarity.
Whoa.
Thanks to the TV's pinpoint sharp resolution, no detail, no flick or kick of the ball will ever be missed. Enjoy 24/7 access to a whole world of online content, including catch-up TV and on-demand services such as Netflix. With this TV, you can also access last week's shows on demand.
Whoa.
With Freeview Play. And for an authentic audio experience, it also comes with a subwoofer to project that bass sound. Don't just hear Pete Donaldson, but feel him.
Yeah. Feel me.
I am. So
feel my nodules.
For your chance to win, email him your favourite moment from 2007 onwards to show at thefootballramble.com. Pete, what have you got as a suggestion this time around?
Gareth Bale getting sold. Spurs replacing with Robert Soldado.
There we go.
The Bale transfer saga. Mm.
There we go.
Let it not be that.
Transfer sagas possibly could have been one, couldn't they?
Yeah.
They're a very modern phenomenon, aren't they? Mm.
They seem to go on for seasons and seasons and seasons.
Carlos Tevez was basically involved in all of them in some way.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Turn the strings in the background, if not in the front.
Oh, then we come to David Moyes.
The bit that United fans probably would have switched off from.
Yep, it was. Some were surprised. Others thought, maybe that makes sense. Ferguson had handpicked him. And I think people thought it was quite a nice appointment. You know what I mean? He'd sort of earned his stripes at Everton.
So I said at the time, I said that they haven't hired David Moyes for the manager he is now. They've hired him for the manager they think he can become.
Yeah.
And although we spoke in the first half about Ferguson never really being overwhelmed by the endless progress that football goes through, I think looking back on it now, and it's easy to after-time it, but looking back on it now, the mistake Ferguson made, who was absolutely instrumentalist in this appointment, mm-hmm. was that he didn't understand that legacies in football management no longer exist.
Yeah.
The last remaining one is Arsene Wenger at Arsenal in terms of the top flight, I would say, top leagues. And it was never going to be sustainable because the instant nature of football in the Premier League now means that David Moyes was on a hide into nothing. They eventually finished seventh, of course. If they'd given him it's unthinkable they would have given him another year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is such a stunning contrast, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the thing is, when you're protecting a legacy, which in footballing sense they were trying to do in terms of winning trophies and stuff like that, actually you have to be very, very decisive because you only have a certain amount of time before that starts to slip away.
Completely. Moyes had pretty much the same squad that had won the league under Ferguson in the previous year, apart from Ryan Giggs who'd retired. And it was the addition of Marouane Fellaini and Moyes being really pleased by that, which was an indicator.
Yeah. I felt sorry for Zaha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was an indication that Moyes didn't quite get the challenge in a way. Do you know what I mean? I don't think anybody could get the job of succeeding Ferguson. So that's not necessarily a slight on Moyes. But during his pre-season, there were reports that Manchester United, it was all a bit of a disaster. They lost 1-0 to Singer All-Stars in their Asia Tour and Yokohama Marinos that they'd lost to as well. I know it's only pre-season, people, it doesn't really matter, but you don't lose games like that. There were little indications that Moyes didn't quite fit the size of the job.
Or maybe
the
scale of his ambition wasn't ready for the task he'd been given. And perhaps, as you say, he didn't quite get that. There's a famous anecdote of him taking the players down to Bondi Beach in Australia to train.
That's right.
And then just getting mobbed because it's Man United on the beach. Of course that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Moyes just, you know, apparently didn't have the nous to figure out that would be the case.
Yeah. I also think a big mistake he made in retrospect is that he didn't leave anywhere near enough staff already in situ at the club.
Yeah.
He insisted on bringing all his coaches in. And if you read, I talked about before, that Carlo Ancelotti book, he says, I always leave one. Always come along and have one already there. Mm-hmm. Because instantly then, if I need to know how things are done, just for reference, I always know exactly what they used to do straight away. If you bring a whole new team in, like Moyes did, you start from scratch again. And players, and not even just players, but staff members, are all quite set in their ways. They want to feel comfortable in their job. Fine, sometimes they need a shake-up, but sometimes they want to feel comfortable. And that team's got no idea how it was done beforehand. And I think that's a big mistake.
I think Moyes tried to turn Manchester United into his Everton.
Yeah,
and it's just
rather than I think we can argue he successfully did.
he tried to turn United into Everton rather than United turning him into Ferguson. Basically.
Yes, exactly.
But it's important to point out though. It was an impossible job anyway.
It was.
But when you walk up Sir Alex Ferguson Way and play your football in the Sir Alex Ferguson stand, the man himself sat in the stadium, and you know, there's even someone was saying there's even like a burger van there named after Ferguson. Yeah. Everything's named after
Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
No beers on sale, just red wine.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was trying to rehash what he did at Everton, essentially. And there was a story, wasn't there, that he was coaching Rio Ferdinand, and he said, "Well, look, Rio, this is how Phil Jagielka does stuff." And Ferdinand was just like, "What the hell?
What are you telling me that?" Yeah, yeah.
And again, it was a bit of naivety from Moyes, understandably so. Yes, of course, it was a poison chalice taken over from Ferguson, but Moyes clearly wasn't the right man for the job. But do you know what was in the wider context for the rest of the Premier League? It was like the spell had been broken.
Well, Jim, you were having a lovely time, weren't you?
Oh, it was great. We all were. The floodgates were open. Actually,
Arsenal only lost 1-0.
We lost 1-0 to a Robin Van Persie header at Old Trafford when everyone was having a great time. Remember at the time we were saying there were fans from other clubs still in there celebrating.
Well, Man United lost 12 games that season, finishing 7th. West Brom, Everton, Newcastle, Tottenham, Liverpool, Man City and Sunderland.
I think that was the season where Newcastle won at Old Trafford for the first time in my lifetime.
Yeah,
they did 1-0.
1-0.
Yeah,
I think it was Dubai, wasn't it?
All those sides I just mentioned, all won at Old Trafford in the league that season. They became mere mortals like everybody else.
Yeah.
Oddly, they reached the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They did actually pretty well there, but in relative terms. But it was, the spell had been broken. Manchester United had dropped down to the level of other clubs. Mm. And I think the other clubs were bloody well relishing that. Mm. Now, Moyes lasted until April the following year.
They fired him the day after they could no longer mathematically qualify for the Champions League. Is that right?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah.
And then Giggsy came in.
Giggsy came over for the remaining, I think, 3 games of the season. That gave fans a little bit of hope and a little bit of cheer, thinking that maybe he could become Man United's Pep Guardiola. It wasn't to be. It wasn't to be, everybody. The following season, they got Louis van Gaal.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a bottle job by them. Mm. And I understand the financial pressures and all the rest of it with the Glazers' ownership and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But rightly or wrongly, however you judge their subsequent sort of achievements, they could have given it to Giggs. I mean, there's no real reason they did. I mean, van Gaal was only... The problem is they went from trying to replace this legacy type appointment to just a load of short appointments now with Van Gaal.
But do you not think with a... Sorry, Jim.
I was going to say, one of the interesting things is that's new to them, isn't it? It's, you know, getting in a heavyweight, you know, European manager with some pedigree is a new experience for that Man United board and for everybody at the club. So actually, this suddenly it's all new, and they're naive and they don't know what they're doing compared to every other elite club being streaked ahead of them.
Before Moyes, they hadn't appointed a new manager since 1986.
And you have
That's
to
ridiculous.
Do you reckon that part of like the machine was just really kind of rusty? Like, what do we do? Where are all the forms? Shit!
Don't you also think it's worth pointing out that they also lost
the forms?
They also lost like David Gill at the same time.
Yeah, that was a big loss.
And he was like a sort of hand in glove worker with Ferguson, very experienced sort of chief executive and administrator. And all that, we had all this saga with Ed Woodward, didn't we? And he was very naive, and they got sort of. You know, that it wasn't clearly 95% of it, and really indeed what we're talking about here is to do with Sir Alex Ferguson, but they lost other operators as well, which is very difficult.
Even playing staff, Ferdinand, Vidic and Evra left the club. Mm. Now, yes, they were older and they were moving on, but Ferguson could always squeeze an extra 5 or 10% out of players, sometimes even more. And also he would have replacements ready, he would just know the lie of the land, he would reshape the team. Without Ferguson, there was no one there really to do that. And Van Gaal came in, and Welbeck and Darren Fletcher left, specifically with Welbeck. The fans were unhappy. They were like, well, hang on, he came through our youth team and all that kind of business. He's still a decent player. Why are you selling him to one of our rivals and all that kind of stuff? Van Gaal didn't give a blooming shiny shite, did he? Mm. And he spent big. Di Maria came in for huge money. Didn't really cut the mustard. There was a lot of big signings. Man United essentially threw money at the problem because they were worried that they'd miss out on Champions League again.
Yeah.
They'd missed out on the Champions League for the first time since the mid-90s. A club that big with that kind of operation, you've got to be in the Champions League.
You can argue players like Martial have kind of underperformed as soon... Well, he was like for the first few weeks, wasn't he? And then he kind of started underperforming and has been ever since, you'd say, for that kind of money. But he was very young.
Yeah.
I would say that Manchester United were taken to the cleaners by a lot of agents and other clubs because football players that came in have not performed to their capacity in any way.
You've got relatively new owners at the time. You lost Gill, you lost Ferguson. It's absolutely the world of football will eat people up. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Mm. Big Sam will eat Mashiri up at Everton because he's not got experience as a football club owner. But you know, taking this back to Fergie, we talked at the start of this about how, you know, it's about the Ferguson era generally, not just at Man United. I wonder if it's really properly been expressed just how much the success, if you want to call it that, and I think really in these terms you are calling it a success, the Premier League has been purely down to Alex Ferguson's Manchester United. Mm. The first 20 years of what was quite a new project it was before football had properly exploded. The Premier League is the most commercially successful and the most commercially viable league in anywhere on the planet. A large part of that is not just because Man United won 13 in the first 20 years, 13 league titles. If they had won those 13 league titles playing terrible football, playing latter-day Mourinho football, would the Premier League be as successful? Mm. Yeah. It wouldn't. It made the Premier League the most marketable football league anywhere in the world. And Ferguson deserves, if you want to call it credit, because some people don't like what football's become, but if you assume that you still like football and you still watch it, Ferguson takes a huge amount of credit
for
that.
That's correct.
Mm. Well, the idea of the Premier League being the huge global brand and that, you know, the examples of the scale of it that we now see all the time is a relatively sort of new thing in terms of our awareness of it. But Man United were always that. Yeah. We always knew that they had tons and tons of fans in China and in the Middle East and all over the world.
They were certainly the first club to do it in on that scale.
Well, it pioneered stuff like media channels, like, you know, MUTV, yeah, stuff like that, when other teams, you know, I'm sure everyone was watching Borough TV back in the day on cable, like I was.
Oh, yeah.
But MUTV was very much...
Was that geo-lock just for that reason?
I don't really know. Nobody else is watching it.
What do you take from the Ferguson sort of tenure? When you look back at those Man United teams, what do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that Ferguson, you know, what I think is so interesting about Ferguson, in one sense, he was very old school, quite traditional in his approach and so on. In another sense, completely ahead of his time. And in another sense, completely in the present.
Yeah.
Like the man was, you know, timeless in his approach and in that kind of thing. He didn't get 100% of the things right. No human being will ever do that. But the way that his... sort of spell cast itself in English football and then in the wider context, as you say, in the kind of globalised game, was just amazing. And I like the fact that Ferguson, he always wanted to entertain the fans. You know, he was aware of the working man. He was aware that football fans came along, wanted to be entertained. They wanted to have a bit of a cheer. And he gave those fans that so many moments, so many cheers. And all the rest of it over the years. The same can't be said about Van Gaal.
No.
49 league goals in 38 games.
No, that's not Man United football.
No.
Ferguson was also ahead of his time in terms of, like, manipulating
being
referees.
A baddie. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Being a baddie as well. You know, he wasn't as bad as, like, Mourinho, but he was a baddie.
But he was more crafty. You're right, he was crafty. There was a sort of a slight imperial feel about Ferguson.
And the siege mentality that, you know, people always talk about with Manchester United sides and stuff and Fergie time and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Mourinho would have learned a lot of that stuff from Ferguson.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. He used to call him boss, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, now we have Mourinho at Manchester United. And, you know, despite Van Gaal winning the FA Cup, of course, there was a bit of a cheer there. He was sacked 2 days after that. Rather annoyed, but I think he went away quietly, though.
but I don't think we're ever going to see a legacy appointment at a big club ever again.
No. Mourinho wants one. He's not capable of
it. So he claims.
They're trying to... Mourinho is making all the right noises in terms of what he says, but what he does is it may be a little bit different. And I still don't remain anywhere near convinced that we'll see Mourinho there for a very
big,
long time.
Big club legacies like that aren't going to happen again. Mid-table kind of Dyche at Burnley, those kind of things might happen for 10 years, 15 years. But like...
Even lower than that, Pete, like Paul Tisdale, Exeter, that sort of stuff. Yeah. But there's not, with respect to them, there's no real expectation. The spotlight is not firmly on them.
Diego,
you're right.
It's on his dress sense.
Yeah, it is. Uh-huh. I don't think you can realistically expect anyone to sustain it under that sort of scrutiny anymore.
Yeah. Diego Simeone at Atletico Madrid, there could be a bit of a legacy there, but it's not the same.
Mm. And it's fair to say that Alex Ferguson had his best years pre-24-hour social media rolling news. Do you think?
That would have helped.
That might have been a massive distraction.
That was still there when he was
still
there.
He still would have had that a bit.
Not as much as now, though.
It certainly only seems to be going one way, isn't it?
Certainly. But I think with Manchester United fans, you know, they won't let go of that Ferguson legacy. You know, how many times do we hear them chanting attack, attack, attack? And, you know, with young players, I mean, you know, Mourinho, he has played a few youngsters, don't get me wrong, but that's not his forte. He likes to spend a lot of money. And that kind of,
Mourinho likes, I mean, a lot's made of that, but essentially what it comes down to is Mourinho likes predictability, and younger players are much more unpredictable.
Completely.
So he won't favour them.
Completely. Mm. And so Manchester United fans looking for young players coming through, yeah, they'll always have that a little bit, but looking for attacking football, basically looking for Sir Alex Ferguson, it's finished. And as you say, there is no real time for legacy anymore in the modern game. I mean, look, Mourinho's Manchester United, they've got a bit of the feel-good factor back at Manchester United. They've turned Old Trafford back into a fortress. The sort of Champions League and league form is decent. But the one thing, Man City are the big boys now.
Exactly.
They are the noisiest of all the neighbours.
But the thing is, though, I mean, those Man United fans, as chastening as it must be to be experiencing that, they have lived through, you know, one of the greatest periods of the sport, one of the greatest stewardships the game will ever see. So, you know,
that can't, to be loved and lost.
Absolutely, it can't be repeated. So, you know, just be thankful that you got to experience it at all, because it's phenomenal.
But when Liverpool, just to finish, when Liverpool failed to defend their crown in 1991, no one would have thought they would have gone 26 years and counting without another league title. Due to Guardiola's Man City and other factors, could be a while yet until Man United are crowned Premier League champions again. Mm. We shall have to wait and see, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to number 2 of our 12 Rambles of Christmas, a daily countdown of what we see as the 12 defining topics in football since we began the Football Ramble back in 2007. One left, gentlemen.
You've got less than 24 hours to get your suggestions in, because we are unveiling our favourite of your suggestions that's going to win a Toshiba TV and have the moment recorded on tomorrow's show, number 1 in what we think is the biggest moment, or the biggest theme, since we started the show in 2007. Show at thefootballramble.com.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
See ya.
Thank you very much, Lukey.
Yeah, yeah. Bit of Fergie time at the end.
Thank you very much, Petey.
For 90 minutes, we'll let you go. United, here we go. Glory, glory, Man United.
And a night heard for the Queen.
12 points that one season, wasn't it?
Shut up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.